Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes, fueled by freedom, that unalienable right to be, came to rescue the injured, rescue the innocent, rescue these truths we hold to be.
Afternoon and a very good holiday weekend to you, Labor Day weekend. Jason Hawes here with you on this Saturday afternoon on American Faith Today. It is the first Saturday and, of course, the first weekend in September, September 3rd, 2016. Glad to be here. Glad to have all of you listening, whether you're listening live or on the archives. As the intro music was playing, I saw that somebody, it looked like, was calling in or had called in, and then apparently they hung up, so I don't know what exactly all of that was, or if you're out there listening, that's great. I appreciate it very much. If you have something on your mind, certainly you're welcome to call in, although I don't know when exactly I would have put you on the air. Certainly a few things I wanted to bring up before getting to any phone calls, but certainly if you're out there listening and if there is something that that you wanted to discuss or question or contribute in any way, you're more than welcome to call back in if you so choose. And the chat room is open, of course, as well. And if you listen on the archives, that is obviously always appreciated very, very much. You don't have the opportunity to contribute by either calling in or signing in and commenting in the chat room or what have you, but listening to me anyway, or my feelings from me to you is very much appreciated when you do that. Again, I've received over the past week or so I don't know necessarily if she's a new listener, but someone who's very interested in the show, who has been very complimentary, and hopefully she'll get a chance to listen to this show today. This being a holiday weekend, by the way, again, and a very happy Labor Day, early Labor Day and Labor Day weekend to you. But this being a holiday weekend, the plan, my plan, is to have at least two shows this weekend, possibly three. Now, I'd already committed to attempting to do a show both today and tomorrow, reasons of which I will get to here in a minute. And since I am off work on Monday, which is a blessing and a curse, which is kind of a good thing and a bad thing, when you work 6 days a week, it is nice to have an occasional day off, a holiday, where you don't even have to go into work. But when you are working as a contractor and you're classified as an independent contractor and thus you don't work, you don't get paid, that's not so good. But I will be off. I found out that our store, the store that I work with, will be closed on Labor Day. They've in the past, on some of these holidays, they've been open. albeit not for a full day, but they have been open for a limited number of hours on like 4th of July and Labor Day. And this year the store was closed on the 4th of July. This year the store will be closed on Labor Day. So, like I said, kind of a blessing and a curse for me to have a day off from work and to have a day to rest or to relax or to do personal stuff or show-related stuff is great, but I lose out on money in the process, so that's not so great, especially when, as always, there's bills and sometimes unexpected bills that come up, like when you wreck a car or what have you. But anyway, I am planning to obviously do the show today, do a show tomorrow, possibly do a show on Monday as well. But I wanted to do a two-part show today, or rather today and tomorrow, concerning some of the, I don't know if you want to call them background, complementary characters, people involved with and a part of both major presidential campaigns, but not the candidates themselves. And today I wanted to focus on Huma Abedin, which I mentioned. I thought about doing a show on Huma Abedin last week, and I did a show on Christian persecution, mostly around the world in other countries. But I mentioned last week, I almost did a show on Huma Abedin last week. I'm going to do that today, and then I'm also going to do a show tomorrow on Steve Bannon. And hopefully I'll be able to collect enough information. I think I will collect enough information to do a show on Steve Bannon tomorrow, the now CEO of the Donald Trump campaign. And I wanted to do Steve Bannon. I wanted to do both of these because, again, I can't emphasize enough that as often and as many times as I kind of bash Donald Trump, I certainly do not want Hillary Clinton to be our president either. More than likely, of course, 95-99% chance probably one of the two is going to be. About the only way that doesn't happen is if somehow the election gets all screwy and then neither candidate gets to 270, or the real conspiracy theory that Obama stays in office. But, again, 95-99% chance either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump obviously is going to be the president of the country. Would not be my choice, either one of them. But, you know, I wanted certainly to remind people, not that I've taken a lot of flack necessarily over it, although at times online, message boards and so forth, but I wanted to remind people that I'm certainly not out there wanting Hillary to be president. I'm really not. And again, I do want to bring up the Steve Bannon side of things because I had a story that I posted on the American Faith Today Facebook page that meant that some of you perhaps saw, maybe you did not, but I wanted to bring that to light, and I wanted to bring that to the show because it's actually what happened in Breitbart, London, is what is happening now with Breitbart here in the United States, and Steve Bannon, the CEO of Breitbart or what have you, now, of course, CEO of the Trump campaign, but Steve Bannon has had a heavy hand and a lot of influence in both cases. And it's the exact same situation being played out, mirror images of one another, right down to the head of Breitbart London leaving that post, and he actually became the head or started running the campaign of Nigel Farage in the United Kingdom with the Brexit vote and the Brexit movement. And, of course, now here we have Steve Bannon leaving. I guess he left. I don't know if he left or not, but certainly going to work for the Trump campaign as his CEO. And again, it's Steve Bannon, from everything that I've heard, everything that I've read, is certainly not a good guy in the least, and I wanted to bring some of that to light. But again, even just how the exact same situation is being played out here in the United States in this election as to what occurred with the Brexit vote in the UK earlier this year. But that's tomorrow. Now, today, I wanted to talk again about the Clinton campaign, the Clinton candidacy, and Huma Abedin. And I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, I posted several stories on the American Faith Today Facebook page that, and I mentioned on last week's show that a couple of Tuesdays back was the period in time during the general election where I kind of temporarily, I don't know if temporarily is the right way to put it. Again, I can't emphasize enough, Hillary Clinton would be disastrous as president of this country. But a couple of Tuesdays ago, it really hit me that Hillary Clinton needed to be stopped. And as I said, I almost, for a brief fleeting moment, thought to myself, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to vote for Donald Trump. I'm still not, personally now, not voting for Donald Trump. But what came out on the Clinton Foundation, what came out on Huma Abedin, much of which I'll be talking about today, and I'll be going back further than just the stories that I posted on the American Faith Today Facebook page. But, I mean, Huma Abedin, of course, is one of Hillary Clinton's most trusted advisors, if not her most trusted advisor. If Hillary Clinton becomes president of the United States, it's entirely possible that Huma Abedin would become the White House chief of staff under Hillary Clinton, and, of course, continue to be one of her most trusted advisors. And there is ample reason, in my humble opinion, ample reason to doubt the loyalty of Huma Abedin to the United States of America and certainly to the Constitution of the United States of America. But most of this is going to be dealing with Huma Abedin's background, her radical connections, her family's radical connections. But I do want to get into the Clinton Foundation, and I don't want to say this is the innocuous part of it, because it really isn't. But in comparison, as sad a statement as this is, it kind of is the innocuous part of it when it comes to Huma, anyway. Not so much the innocuous part of it when it comes to Hillary herself. It's arguably the worst part of it when it comes to Hillary. But this story was reported numerous sources. I'm reading here, though, from Canada Free Press, an article by Matthew Vadim entitled Huma Abedin, Hillary's Bribe Broker. He writes, and also there's a link to Front Page Mag, which is a conservative-leaning website as well. But Vadim writes, embattled Hillary Clinton enforcer Huma Abedin gave foreign leaders and activists special access to Clinton when she was Secretary of State, not before, mind you, but after, and only after, they donated to the congenitally corrupt Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, according to, well, not now, not so newly released emails, but back on August 23rd, they were newly released emails. Vadim goes on to say, it is yet more evidence that in the event Hillary becomes president, her administration will be at least as venal and crooked as her husband Bill's was. Bill sold nights in the Lincoln bedroom at the White House while he was president, but Hillary has been selling her presidential favors in advance for years through the tax-exempt Clinton Foundation, which is little more than an anticipatory bribe processing center. With Hillary installed in the Oval Office, the sky's the limit. Now, the way this worked with Huma is Huma basically worked as a gatekeeper, as it says here in the article. This email is obtained by Watchdog and almost Bulldog group, Judicial Watch. They had got a hold of these emails that appeared to show that Huma Abedin served as a gatekeeper, auctioning access to the would-be president in exchange for donations to the Clinton Foundation. When individuals wanted to meet with Hillary, Abedin would say no and introduce them to the foundation, and no doubt to the appropriate people to take their money, to take their payoff, take their bribe, what have you. After the so-called donation was received, access to Clinton would be approved. Judicial Watch stated, in more than a dozen email exchanges, Abedin provided expedited, direct access to Clinton for donors who had contributed from $25,000 to $10 million to the Clinton Foundation. In many instances, Clinton Foundation top executive Doug Band, who worked with the foundation throughout Hillary Clinton's tenure at the State Department as Secretary of State, coordinated closely with Abedin. And Abedin's June deposition to Judicial Watch, she conceded that part of her job at the State Department was taking care of Clinton family affairs. We know, obviously, that she is fiercely loyal to Hillary Clinton, and obviously more loyal to Clinton than she would be to the country, the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, among the Abedin Band emails is an exchange that you may have heard about, at least the Crown Prince of Bahrain, who had requested a meeting with Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. The Crown Prince of Bahrain was forced to go through the Clinton Foundation for an appointment. Abedin advised Band that when she went through, quote, normal channels at State, Clinton declined to meet. She would only meet, in other words, if they funneled these people through the Clinton Foundation, and then, no doubt, if these people made a donation to the Clinton Foundation. Now, it goes on to talk a little bit about more here in this article about the Prince of Bahrain, Crown Prince, and also talks about an email thread from 2009 in which Band asked Abedin to get the State Department to expedite visas for members of the Wolverhampton UK Football Club. One of the members, it seems, had a criminal charge that had thrown a wrench into the visa issuance process. Band was inquiring on behalf of Hollywood mogul Casey Wasserman, president of the Wasserman Foundation, who, of course, kicked in between $5 million and $10 million to the Clinton Foundation. Abedin also arranged nearly immediate access to her boss, Hillary Clinton, after SlimFast tycoon S. Daniel Abraham coughed up between $5 million and $10 million to the Clinton Foundation. Other Clinton Foundation donors got meetings with Mrs. Clinton after Abedin shook them down for gifts to the foundation. And again, there's more documentation, although that's pretty much, for all intents and purposes, the end of the article. But this was news, of course, that came out that you had Hillary Clinton. We know that over half, 55%, whatever it wound up being, of the people that she held, people, groups, foreign leaders, et cetera, that she held private meetings with as Secretary of State, had first donated to the Clinton Foundation, and here you had loyal little Huma funneling people, refusing. And apparently, you know, following Hillary Clinton's orders that she would not meet with these people unless they went to the Clinton Foundation first and made a donation. And Huma Abedin, loyal little Muslim little puppy dog that she is, following her master's orders, if you will, and sending these people to the Clinton Foundation, having them make a donation, or getting the Clinton Foundation to shake them down for a donation, and then sending them back to Hillary, in which Queen Hillary would then agree, out of the goodness and benevolence of her lovely little heart, to then meet with these people after the check had been in the mail, so to speak. But anyway, like I said, that's almost the more innocuous aspect of Huma Abedin, although it does show that, again, whatever Hillary Clinton wants her to do, she'll do. If it's legal, great. If it's illegal, doesn't really matter. She'll do it anyway. Now, the big threat here, though, and the big concern, is the radical Islamic ties within Huma Abedin's family, with her now deceased father, her still living mother, herself, and the people and the organizations and the groups that they have found themselves aligned with. Now, I wanted to throw this in. You know, I really feel kind of dirty. I'm probably going to have to take a shower or naturally here in my apartment. I don't even have a shower. I just have a bathtub. So I may have to jump in the bath after the show's over for kind of sticking up for Donald Trump. But, you know, we know that the media, the leftist media, the mainstream media, even the new media that's leftist, which the Daily Beast certainly is, we know they're going to lie. We know they're going to put their head in the sand. We know they're going to chant Islamophobia and what have you. But the Daily Beast, Dean Obadala, writing this article, it was on August 31st, and it's titled "Donald Trump's Despicable Anti-Muslim Huma Abedin Smear." A candidate who's built his entire appeal around fear and loathing once again shows his true dark colors. He writes, after the backlash when chicken hawk Donald Trump mocked the mother of American hero Captain Humayun Khan, you might think he'd at least pause before launching another hateful attack on a grieving Muslim woman. By the way, of course, Huma Abedin, a grieving Muslim woman because of Anthony Weiner, because Anthony Weiner has done her so wrong, and Huma Abedin loved Anthony Weiner from the depths of her heart and from the depths of her soul, and it was just absolutely head over heels. You know, call me cryptic, call me skeptical, you know, call me a hater if you will, but from an outside perspective, and I know those of us on the conservative side, maybe we lean more this way regardless, but from an outside perspective, rhetorical question, does anybody out there really think that the Huma Abedin-Anthony Weiner marriage was all that legitimate to start with? I mean, it basically modeled the Bill and Hillary marriage. I mean, here you have two men, and Bill Clinton and an Anthony Weiner, you know, serial horn dogs, if you will, serial philanderers, again, horn dogs, and you have the scorned, hurt, grieving wives, and to me, both of these marriages are nothing more than marriages for appearances, marriages of convenience, marriages for political expediency or political, I don't know, I am making a good political name for yourself, doing something that, well, however you want to put it, going through the motions of making yourself look like an all-American family or what have you. But, I mean, to me, that was never a marriage that remotely seemed real. I mean, I don't, obviously, I'm not close to them. But you've got Anthony Weiner that's more worried about sexting with women who he's not married to than being in a loving relationship with his wife. You've got Huma Abedin, who seems more concerned with doing whatever Hillary wants her to do and with her own political/government career than maybe being a loving wife to Anthony Weiner. And there's even a side to this in which when you look at the background of what Huma Abedin comes from and what they believe in, the thought of a Muslim woman marrying a Jewish, I mean, any kind of an infidel, but especially a Jewish man is, I mean, against those or amongst those who are Sharia law kind of fundamentalist, radical Islamic types, that brings shame on a family for a woman, a Muslim woman, to marry a Jewish man, which has led some to think that the whole thing was a ruse, kind of Huma trying to get access into to government information, to confidential information, to placing herself in a somewhat trusted seat of authority to where, again, she would have access to all of these documents, secrets, obviously not as much as people like the president or even people like Anthony Weiner when he was in Congress would perhaps have, but that she would be right there. She would be aligned with these people and in that circle, so to speak. But anyway, he's saying that Donald Trump should have left the grieving Muslim woman with the, in my humble opinion, fake marriage to Anthony Weiner alone. But there he was Monday suggesting that Huma Abedin, top aide to Hillary Clinton and wounded wife of Anthony Weiner, was somehow tied to radical Islamic groups. He says the media has largely ignored Trump's remarks as if a famous Muslim American being smeared with a false connection to terror by the Republican presidential candidate is not worthy of coverage. But this vicious attack is very much a story, one that says nothing at all about Abedin and a great deal about Trump. Now, the author here goes on to talk about how Trump had kind of tried to refine himself or allow himself to be refined, reading pre-approved speeches from a teleprompter, doing his pivot, so to speak. He goes on to say that at first, Trump said something very kind, very benign, very appropriate regarding Huma Abedin. He said in a prepared statement released just after Abedin announced Monday that she was separating from Weiner, the serially disgraced former congressman, Trump said, "Huma is making a very wise decision. I know Anthony Weiner well, and she will be far better off without him." From there, he attacked Hillary Clinton's judgment but didn't cast any aspersions on Abedin. But later that day, Trump spoke for himself and showed his true colors, the same ones that gave us his racist attacks on American judges, bully boy mocking of a disabled reporter, and taunts about women's faces and bodies. While appearing on a conservative radio show in Seattle, Trump suggested Abedin was somehow in league with radical Islamic groups, saying, "You know, by the way, take a look at where she worked, by the way, and take a look at where her mother worked and works. You take a look at the whole event." The author goes on to say that the GOP presidential nominee was now bringing to the forefront conspiracy theories, supposedly tying Abedin to Islamic terror groups, or at least putting her in sympathy with their views, something Trump supporter, really doesn't matter, although I'm disappointed that she's a Trump supporter, but it really doesn't matter if Michelle Bachmann is a Trump supporter, but of course the author has to point that out. Something Trump supporter Michelle Bachmann first began promoting back in 2012, which is why it doesn't matter. Obviously, she was running for president herself in 2012. But Bachmann was immediately ridiculed for what this author calls baseless claim, concocted by the likes of anti-Muslim bigot Frank Gaffney. Even Republicans like Senator John McCain publicly defended Abedin, saying these attacks on Huma have no logic, no basis, and no merit, and they need to stop now. Well, John McCain, as we know, is not exactly a friend to conservatives. John McCain has been, in some cases, friendlier to ISIS and to groups and rebels and terrorists that became part of ISIS than he has been to conservative Americans or maybe Americans in general. But anyway... And, of course, this is what the media does, that, and a little bit more here on the media. You have Sean Duffy of Wisconsin, who this author labels another Trump supporter, asking, "Why aren't we talking about Huma and her ties to the Muslim Brotherhood? Why aren't we talking about the fact that she was an editor for a Sharia newspaper?" Well, the media has done everything that they can to try to bury this, to try to discredit this, to try to take a quick cursory look and say, "Oh, yep, we checked it out, nothing to see here," and to make it go away. It mentions here that the Washington Post scored Duffy's allegation that Abedin was part of the Muslim Brotherhood or connected to some radical Islamic publication, earned the full four Pinocchios. Fact checkers have supposedly noted that the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs is a staid academic journal that examines Muslim minority sects and Muslims who live as minorities in countries. and nothing else. They're saying there's nothing radical about it. There's nothing to see here. Well, and again, he tries to even make the claim here that Trump, who, again, I don't like to defend, but if you're going to say something that's inaccurate and say that Trump attacking Huma Abedin is Trump accusing all Muslims of being terrorists, which basically is what the article even says, what the author tries to claim, well, obviously that's ludicrous. But, again, the media has not taken an in-depth look at Huma Abedin's connections, at Huma Abedin's at this journal, at the Institute for Muslim Minority Affairs, and the journal that she was an editor on, the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs. They are trying to make it go away. They are trying to say there's nothing to see here. There's plenty of information that I'm going to try to share here in the remaining 15 minutes, as much as I can, to raise concern without a doubt. This from the Independent Sentinel. It's over a year ago. Huma Abedin and our government. It's written by John Valesik, who is a retired U.S. naval officer. And he writes, "The Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs is more than a journal. It is a book commissioned by the House of Saud and published by the Institute for Muslim Minority Affairs. The book contains plans for Muslim conquest and includes a blueprint for the infiltration of non-Muslim lands. It all starts with the father of Huma Abedin, Saeed Zainul Abedin, and this journal paid for by the Al-Saud dynasty in Saudi Arabia. Huma Abedin served on the board of the Institute for Muslim Minority Affairs for many years at the same time she worked for Hillary Clinton." And, you know, not so coincidentally, this supposedly benign journal that just documents Muslim minorities in other countries, when Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, Huma Abedin at that moment was removed from the masthead of being listed as an editor on the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs. But that's all coincidental, isn't it? The agenda, or again, Huma Abedin served on the board of the Institute for Muslim Minority Affairs for many years at the same time she worked for Hillary Clinton. The agenda of the IMMA, in their own words, it is to grow an unassimilated, aggressive population of Islamic supremacists who will gradually but dramatically alter the character of the West. Huma's mother, Saleha Abedin, has proven ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and is a member of their women's division. She's a member of the Muslim Sisterhood, whose goal is to acquire a unified global perception in every nation in the world regarding the position of women. Valesik says, "I'd like to know how that appeals to the feminists, but all we hear is silence from them." Now, Huma's mother is also a board member of the International Islamic Council for Dawah and Relief. This entity is pro-Hamas and a part of the Union of Good, which is not so good because it's been designated by the State Department an international terrorist organization led by Yousef al-Qaradawi. And what of Benghazi? It was Huma Abedin who forwarded to Hillary Clinton's personal emails the details of the establishment of the special mission in Benghazi, the updates about the request for security, and the information about the attack on September 11th, 2012. The book was commissioned and approved by the King of Saudi Arabia. One of the, quote, holy concepts presented in the book is the premise of another system. It was one of many books and writings to be used as a starting point of a new plan to conquer the world with Islam. In the book, a chapter titled "The Muslim Minority Affairs" is that the United States must be destroyed. Thus, it has become a policy that the House of Al-Saud has implemented. As mentioned, and Valesik says in my last column, Takiyah and Maruna are both basic principles of the concept. Along with the recruiting of non-Muslims, they use organizations like the Muslim Society of North America, INSA, and the Muslim Student Association, which Huma Abedin was a member of at George Washington University, to work to counter any assimilation of Muslims into a non-Islamic society. After decades of non-assimilation, they have now moved to the step of forcing their influence of non-Muslims, a virtual sector of compliance, to the laws they feel they must impose on others. So where does Huma Abedin fit in? She was a member of the IMMS, which helped formulate the book, and it would not be difficult to assume under the Maruna that she would marry a Jew, Anthony Weiner, to lend proof of her Americanization, her assimilation into our culture. Her mother, a leader in the Muslim Brotherhood, never denounced the marriage, a rather strange reaction from someone who believes devoutly in religious purity. It appears that Huma, under Maruna, might have a higher calling. She is in position to know all of America's secrets. And how to explain Huma Abedin's close ties with Dr. Abdullah Omar Nassif, proven to be an Al-Qaeda financer. The Abedin family freely moved between the U.S. and the Middle East, dealing with such people as Maulana Muhammad Yusuf of Jamaat-e-Islami in India. Again, just needless to say, bad radical people. This same family still maintains ties to the Muslim Brotherhood with the Wahhabist and the extreme Salafist. The major question now is, along with Nassif, have the Abedins worked to launch programs in the U.S. and U.K. to bring them down from the inside? And again, that's basically all there is to that article. But it's very, very concerning, and certainly documenting in its own words that the Journal of Minority Muslim Affairs is not such a Muslim Minority Affairs is not just such a stated, boring, harmless little academic journal, but it's actually something a little more sinister than that, actually much more sinister than that. Now, again, I'm going to be pretty much running out of time fairly quickly here. I think in the remaining amount of time, I'm not going to be able to cover all of this, which is kind of unfortunate, but I want to cover because I think it's the most relevant. I'll have postings, and again, you can check out this information for yourself as well. I would encourage you to do so regarding some of the connections to Huma Abedin and to the Abedin family. But I wanted to get to National Review, and this actually goes back a few years ago. Andrew McCarthy, it goes back to 2013, and again, it talks about Huma's Muslim Brotherhood radical Islamic connections. He writes, Ms. Abedin worked for many years at a journal that promotes Islamic supremacist ideology that was funded by a top Al-Qaeda financier, Abdullah Omar Nassif. Nassif ran the Rabita Trust, a formerly designated foreign terrorist organization under American law. And we know that Huma worked for, she was an editor for this journal for some 10 years. The news that came out was that Hillary gave her big speech in 1995, 1996, saying that women's rights were human rights, and that Huma Abedin in this Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs basically tore that speech to shreds. But anyway, Ms. Abedin and Nassif overlapped at the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs for at least 7 years. Throughout that time, Ms. Abedin worked for Hillary Clinton in various capacities. Ms. Abedin's late father, Dr. Zayed Abedin, was recruited by Nassif to run the JMMA, Journal for Muslim Minority Affairs, in Saudi Arabia. The journal was operated under the management of the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, a virulently anti-Semitic and Sharia supremacist organization. But again, Washington Post, there's no radical connections whatsoever, are there? When Dr. Abedin died, editorial control of the journal passed to his wife, Dr. Saleha Mahmoud Abedin, Huma's mother. Saleha Abedin, again, closely tied to the Muslim Brotherhood and the supporters of violent jihad. Among other things, she directs an organization, the International Islamic Committee for Women and Child, the IICWC, through its parent entity, the International Islamic Council for Dawah and Relief, is a component of the Union for Good, also known as the Union of Good, another formally designated terrorist organization. The Union for Good is led by Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, the notorious Muslim Brotherhood jurist who has issued fatwas, calling for the killing of American military and support personnel in Iraq, as well as suicide bombings in Israel. As detailed, the Obama White House recently hosted this gentleman's principal deputy, Sheikh Abdullah bin Baya, who also endorsed the fatwa calling for the killing of U.S. troops and personnel in Iraq. Like Sheikh Qaradawi, who helped write the charter for the IICWC, Saleha Abedin is an influential Sharia activist who has, for example, published a book calling Women in Islam that claims man-made laws enslave women. Saleha Abedin, by the way, also pretty much blamed the United States for 9/11, for our oppressing of Iraqis, for our oppressing of Muslims, for our meddling over there. But anyway, in this book, it reportedly provides Sharia justifications for such practices as female genital mutilation, the death penalty for apostates from Islam, the legal subordination of women, and the participation of women in violent jihad. Dr. Abedin has nevertheless been hailed in the progressive press, like the Washington Post, I'm sure, as a leading voice on women's rights in the Muslim world to, quote, foreign policy. What they never quite get around to telling you is that this means women's rights in the repressive Sharia context. Now, Huma, in the mid to late 90s, was an intern at the Clinton White House, an assistant editor at the Journal for Muslim Minority Affairs, a member of the executive board of the Muslim Students Association at George Washington University, heading its social community. The MSA, which has a vast network of chapters of universities across North America, is the foundation of the Muslim Brotherhood's infrastructure in the United States. Now, McCarthy says not every Muslim student joins the Muslim Student Association to become members of the Brotherhood or radical Islamist, but they do have an indoctrination program that Sam Tadros describes as a lengthy process of study and service that leads to Muslim Brotherhood membership, a process designed to ensure with absolute certainty that there is conformity to the movement's ideology and a clear adherence to its leadership's authority. And again, talking about some of the other things that the Muslim Student Association birth, being connected to the ISNA, which supports Hamas. ISNA, again, named an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation case, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You had Anwar al-Awlaki, who was at a time the spiritual guide after Huma Abedin left, but was at a time the spiritual guide for the Muslim Brotherhood, or excuse me, the Muslim Student Association of George Washington University, where, again, Huma Abedin went to school. McCarthy points out policies that changed and became more Muslim Brotherhood friendly once Abedin served as Hillary Clinton's one of her top staffers and advisors in the State Department. The State Department had an emissary in Egypt who trained operatives of the Brotherhood and other Islamist organizations in democracy procedures. The State Department announced that the Obama administration would be satisfied with the election of a Muslim Brotherhood-dominated government in Egypt. Secretary Clinton personally intervened to reverse a Bush administration ruling that barred Tariq Ramadan, grandson of the Brotherhood's founder and son of one of its most influential early leaders, from entering the United States, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on here. Again, I've got just a minute or two left, and I'm not sure how much I've been able to present to you that really drives the point home. Hopefully a few things here. But the point is there's ample research for you to check out for yourself. There's certainly ample evidence to indicate that Huma Abedin's late father, that Huma Abedin's still living mother, have willingly aligned themselves with Muslim Brotherhood operatives, with groups that either are terrorist groups, that are connected with terrorist groups, that fund terrorist groups. And this is a woman that is one of Hillary Clinton's most trusted advisors. This is a woman that could become White House Chief of Staff. This is a woman who will always have Hillary Clinton's ear to set policy for the United States to set foreign policy for the United States. So, again, we certainly do not want a Hillary Clinton presidency. In some ways, that might be more dangerous than a Donald Trump presidency, although I will say that Donald Trump's connections to Vladimir Putin and to Russia are in many ways equally concerning. So, again, I can't emphasize enough personally that there are no good choices between these two in this election, but